The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers and their Grizzly range. The next generation of Grizzly is here. Meet the Grizzly Ultimate, the most powerful AC level 2 charger for home use. With a maximum current of 80 amps, that's 19.2 kilowatts, your vehicle could be charged up to twice as fast as a standard level 2 and up to 15 times faster than a level 1. And of course, it's Wi-Fi connected, so you can take control of your home charging, view stats, set a charging schedule, take part in demand response programs, and control your charger remotely. And that joins the lineup alongside the original Grizzly Classic, the Grizzly Duo, designed to charge two vehicles at the same time, the Grizzly Mini, a portable charging station, and the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. Those chargers can adjust the current from 16 amps up to 40 amps, that's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, the Grizzly Ranger IP67 rated, built in Canada, and with the highest quality materials, you can order yours right now. Go to unitedchargers.com, that's unitedchargers.com.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's July the 26th, 2024, and this is episode number 47. Thank you very much for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about the reveal of the Cadillac Soleil convertible concept, Rivian slashing charging time in its LFP packs, EV prices are going back up, maybe, and of course, much, much more. Joining us today is the well-traveled Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the modest Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. All right, so So to start the show, I just want to say, Tom's been away for a couple of weeks. He's back. We're going to talk to him about that for a second. But I just want to mention, too, that Martin is also back in a way. He was on a mini vacation, I think, this past week. But he's been taking a bit of a step back from his the EV News Daily show. So many of you have noticed that there were no episodes for a period of time there, but they have started back up. I think you had a few episodes and then you went on this little mini vacation. And so, but your people can now tune in and every day and get that EV News hit like they've been getting before. And it's going to be good, right?
Thank you for your patience. Yes, all back in the swing of things. Apart from the past few days, I've been away with the family at a lodge, I guess you would call it, with a very patchy Wi-Fi. So I've been really out of the loop, so I'm looking forward to hearing what is in the news today and offering my terrible thoughts on it. So yeah,
and Martin, I would like to personally thank you for coming back, because I've mentioned this before on the show. When you go periods without recording and doing your show, I get emails and messages like, "What's up with Martin? Is he okay? Tom, you know, could you check in with Martin? Let us know, is he okay? I miss his show. Can't you talk to your friend and tell him to start doing that again?" So please continue doing that. So you know, your followers don't come to my channel just to tell me, "Hey, we don't watch your stuff, but could you talk to your friend and get him going again? Because we miss his news." So thank you for coming back.
Hey, I'm back. Thank you for that. And I'm sorry, but I'm back.
Before we get to you, Tom, I want to ask you about your trip. I just saw this little thing here from Boomer Bits, who is a longtime viewer. "Good morning from Central Florida and my new Equinox EV 2RS. Tom is going to love this car and we can say goodbye to my Bolt." So congrats on that. And Tom, our resident Equinox enthusiast, has something to look forward to, apparently. So that's great to hear.
I just locked in a loan date for it, too. Unfortunately, I'm not getting it till September. But GM is providing it to me. It took a while, longer than usual. But they're, I think for a little while, they weren't happy with me because I ran out with the Bolt on the range test and made them look bad. Even though I didn't make them look bad, I made me look bad. But they were a little dicey about giving me a car if I was going to do a range test. They didn't want me to do a range test. But I said, well, that comes with the territory. And if you don't want to give me one, I'll just rent one on one of the sites or get a loaner. And then, so they came around. I have Blazer and Equinox and Silverado lined up in the fall, well, in September and on. So looking forward to it. So,
yeah.
Because I might be, and then sorry to cut you off again, Don, but I might be in the market for a third EV soon because I've been letting my dad drive my Bolt and he's gotten really comfortable with it. So I think the 2018 Accord is going to get put up for sale soon and dad's going to be driving his first EV. So, you know, there might be room in the driveway for another EV. I might have to go on battery bargains, Dom, and help you guys help me decide which, because there's so many of them I want. I want Volvo EX30. I want to wait for the new Kia. You know, there's so many, and the Equinox, of course. So I don't know. And then I look at the used prices, and I'm like, damn, I was looking at an i3, a 2015 BEV i3 for $6,000.
Ooh, yeah. That's good. Wow.
Yeah. And I'm like,
20 miles.
Damn, 52. So I'm like, nice. Damn, like I know it'll only go about 50 miles, but that'll take care of like 90% of Meredith's and my driving around here. Like, so I don't know. Like, I might have to come on the show and have you guys help me decide what to do.
Right on. Hey, so Tom, last week you appeared for a little while with us on the show, and you look very tanned because you were on your vacation, you know, touring the Mediterranean area or someplace. So how? I mean, so while you were there, I mean, you're on vacation, but you know, you're always taking EVs anyway. So I was just wondering if you spotted any interesting. How was it, and also did you spot any interesting EVs that you want to tell us about?
So, yeah, no, you know, it was a cruise. So we were, you know, on the boat for a good deal of the time. I did see some EVs, some of the ones that we don't get to see here, you know, the highlight was the XPeng. Was it the G8? I forget the model numbers. It's their SUV. G9, yeah. And there was a family with one waiting to go on a barge. So they were just sitting there. So I got to walk up and talk to them. They didn't speak English very well. I got to check. They knew that I was just wanted to look at their car, and they're like, okay. So I got to check that out in person. But yeah, had a great time in the vacay. Did Italy, Greece, Croatia, Montenegro. It was really, really, really nice. Really nice time. Lovely time. And then spent the last day after the ship arrived. It docked in Venice. My wife and I spent an extra night in Venice. So we got a hotel room and just kind of walked around Venice, which is majestic. So super, super time. Good time. And I was glad that I was able to dial in one of the shows with you guys and, you know, show you some water as we were cruising along.
Yeah, that was cool. All right.
When I go on vacation, I don't know, everybody does vacation differently. I completely tune out. So I have no idea what happened in the last 2 weeks of the EV world. Like I'm not on my phone checking things. Right. I'm on vacation. Like, and that's it. I don't want to know. I'm still unpacking emails like from, well, I don't answer emails. I just have fun. So,
well, a lot has happened. Tesla has caught on to Kyle's wet rag trick, and they're put out some post or something about it. What did you see that, Kyle?
Yeah, of course. We put out a video on it today.
And, okay.
But it's not my trick. I just want to be clear. Oh. I didn't come up with this. But okay. Yeah, we did a whole 20-minute episode on it today, talking about, you know, what it actually does, what it used to do. And I think it's interesting.
What channel is that on?
Out of Spec Podcast.
Awesome. So with Francie?
Yep.
Awesome. Okay. So if people are really interested, want to dive deep into that whole wet rag controversy, there's where you go to do it. Out of Spec Podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I think the basic is it started 7 or 8 years ago, and this is the first time Tesla has said something about it, but we all kind of knew, like, of course they can't like this, but it really did work. One thing Tesla said in a Twitter post, that's all they've done on it, replying to an old tweet, was that it didn't work, and it did work. And now there's some new logic in there to detect when the temperature rise is not consistent with the charging speeds, and they will cap your charging performance to work around the wet rag. So they just it doesn't actually really damage them in any way. We've never seen particular issue with them. Tesla claims, okay, maybe it could have fooled with some of their logic on the back end, but really what they should do is just make a cable that doesn't overheat while charging, because it'll overheat in less than 2 minutes on a Cybertruck. And that's,
is there anybody, there's going to be a way to get like to cooling up in there somehow, you think?
So the wet rag, just so everyone realizes, the point of the wet rag is not to cool the actual mating surface where the heat is at its generation source,
right?
But it's to cool the exterior temperature sensor. Since the main limitation of supercharging is actually the plastic enclosure temperature sensor, where people were burning their hands back in the V2 days, or at least complaining of really hot cables. They're like, hey, this is crazy. Tesla would dynamically derate to not overheat the plastic enclosure. And it wasn't really to protect anything dangerous. It was just so that you wouldn't burn your hands. So initially we started just by putting a rag or a shaded area over the handle. And then we're like, oh, if we put some water on it, that really helps. And we get consistent charging speeds. There's other temperature sensors throughout this entire handle and on the vehicle side to derate when the mating surface gets hot still, which is why we felt okay doing it. At least we never recommended our audience to do it. Right. And so, you know, we're always like, okay, this isn't great, but what are we supposed to do? Just sit here for an extra 10 minutes, I guess so. Now, of course, they've caught on. They don't like the idea of cooling the exterior temperature sensor. And they will, once it derates, even if you try and put a wet rag over it now, it will not unlock to high speed.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kyle, you say once you put a wet rag on it, what if you did it at the beginning? So it won't work. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
No, I already tried, and it will. I tried it before Tesla said anything, because I was doing a charging test on a car. Of course, now that they said anything, we're not going to go out and do wet rags anymore. I mean, who knows? But really,
not on camera, at least, Kyle.
Yeah, not on camera, at least. But now they wouldn't. They wouldn't unlock full charging speeds with the wet rag, because the temperature rise was not as consistent as they were expecting it to be. So the logic is there where it actually doesn't work anymore, but that means that we're all stuck with poor charging experiences in summer, and at least with Cybertruck in winter time as well.
Yeah. So listen, this has worked for a long time, and I know tons of people that have done it. I've actually done it in the past when I had my Teslas. And the funny thing is, Kyle, you don't even know this. I almost approached you once because, Martin. So a while ago, when this was kind of like a lot of people were doing it and talking about it, I never liked the idea of a wet rag, like a sloppy wet rag. I thought a super inexpensive solution might be a good business venture. So I actually started doing a little bit of research, and I was going to ask you if you wanted to partner with me on this. And I was developing an ice pack with Velcro that perfectly fit the connector. And it would just, and you know, you'd keep it a little, say, ice pack if you're on a road trip in your car, like a small thing with some additional ice in there, so to keep it nice and cold. And then when you go, you'd put it, and it would be like a clamshell, and it would perfectly fit the connector, and you'd snap it on as soon as charging stopped. Now the connector doesn't get wet. It's just nice and cold. It's ice on it. And then it's one of those things that slipped through the cracks. But I was like, we could probably make this thing for like $2 or $3 and sell it for $20. and have like a little side project. But you know, like many ideas that I have, I didn't follow through with it, and it would have been stopped at this point anyway.
Yeah, so that's an idea that definitely would have got Tesla's attention and signed, you know, that would have been like a, hey guys, don't do that situation.
Yeah, we've been in trouble.
The thing is, I guess, how far is Tesla willing to go to solve this problem? So first of all, we know version 4s have different immersion cooled cables all the way to the copper interface surface, the silver plated copper. But is that going to be enough? Or will the exterior of the handle still get hot on that? We don't know. Need to do more testing. Thankfully, there's a V4 going in only about 2 hours away from my house, so I can do some testing up there in the mountains, which will be great. And by V4, I mean V4 dispenser, not cabinet. So it's still V3.5 cabinets. The other thought here is, when it rains outside or when you pour water on the connector, which is, you know, same, it doesn't make a difference if it's rain or you're pouring it out of a water bottle, the charging speeds improve still. Not maybe anymore because they have this new logic in place, but at least that worked really well. And I just did an R1S road trip, you know, back from California here to Colorado. And that we were middle of the summer, really hot temperatures. And I would just keep an extra, you know, crappy water bottle like Aquafina or Dasani or one of those crap brands that no one should drink. And I poured it all over the cable and connector and charging speeds shot right back up. So it's just like, if you're going on a road trip, hope for rain.
I thought that during like our last race of Vegas, someone did that a little bit with the CCS connector and saw an improvement. I know we did, I think, at one point, and it looked like, I don't know if it was actually connected, but it looked like it was actually improving because we were derated our speed. But I don't know if it's a thing. Someone had asked earlier in the chat here, Jamie Bell, are the connectors on the CCS deeper/better than NACS?
Oh, it just depends on the specific cable that we're talking about. There's probably 800 different CCS cables on the market, each one pros and cons and different cooling methods. But yes, many of them are better than Tesla's, you know, version 3 cables.
Right.
So that's not necessarily true. NACS pins are actually rated for 1,000 amps up to 1,000 volts in certain configurations. So I'm not sure that could be for a specific cable or a specific model of inlet port on a vehicle. Sure, that's possible. But yeah, like I said, we never really recommend anyone to work with this or to mess around with it. But, you know, water cooling effects from rain or a water bottle still seem to have produced better results. Now with the new logic, I bet it won't. But we'll see. Basically, there you go. So Tesla's documents show 1,000 volts, 1,000 amps for NACS officially. And then they derate based off of certain temperature limits.
Okay.
But the technical rated nominal output of the version 3 supercharger is 350 amps, which is the nominal consistent output of that entire cable. But I've seen them derate to even below that.
So it sounds like Tesla's legal department has been busy recently. Dealing with stuff like that, but also I think they...
I don't think this comes from their legal department. This is just a tweet that their charging account made.
Right. I was going to just use that to segue to this next part. It's okay. It's smoothest segue ever. But because I wanted to talk about EV Jack. So I think last week we talked about Jeffco a little bit. Was that the name of the company, Tom?
Yeah, Jeffco EV.
Jeffco EV. That I think Tesla's legal department had issue with. Was it an adapter they were doing?
Yeah, they have the NACS to CCS1 adapter that they put out. Right. That's very low quality. They claimed it had temperature sensors inside. Tesla says it doesn't. They claimed it had an IP rating of IP54 rating for the enclosure against water intrusion. Tesla says it does not pass IP54 standards. So they basically entered a lawsuit with them to tell them to stop selling it.
Right. So this week, you were telling us just before the show, even though you've been unplugged for a couple of weeks, you're already on this case that Tesla's legal is maybe looking at this other company called EVject. Is that possible? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, Tesla just entered a lawsuit with EVject yesterday or the day before. I believe they sent them a cease and desist, and they're going after them for trademark or copyright infringement. I haven't read the document yet. But I don't know if it's just a trademark infringement for them using the Tesla name or if they're making claim that the device is not safe or that it could possibly damage their charging equipment if somebody uses it. I don't know the whole details of the suit, but there is a lawsuit. They as you mentioned, Tesla's legal department has been busy. I telegraphed this a few weeks ago on the podcast and said, be prepared. We're going to hear some things from Tesla. And now we've had this Jeffco EV with the NACS adapter lawsuit. We've had the EVject. And I don't think that's the last we're going to hear of Tesla. So stay tuned.
Right. And this is the EVject you did to the review of this thing on the a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, I did a full review of it, and I said, you know, I mean, I didn't do it like a safety or teardown or engineering review of it. I'm not quite honestly qualified to do that. You know, you'd want to talk to a Monroe and Associates or something like that. But sure. I said, you know, the theory of it, some sort of a device that allows you to do this, I think is needed. You know, I think not for everybody, but. Let's face it, there's a lot of charging stations that are in sketchy areas. And there's a lot of specific sites that are like behind buildings where it's dark at night. I wouldn't want my wife plugging into some of these, like in these Walmart parking lots at 2 a.m. I mean, you don't always have to do that, but there could be a time where, you know, she's got to take her parents get sick. They live in Vermont. She's just got to hop in a car and drive up there in the middle of the night and stop halfway to charge. You know, you don't want to be stuck. And as Kyle has mentioned this very early on with EVs, not on our, before we were even doing this podcast, he and I were talking about it, you know, and he even mentioned, he goes, you know, the one thing that's kind of weird about this, we're going to have issues where once people realize you're stuck, you cannot get away. When your car is plugged in and you're charging, you're a sitting target. There's nothing you can do other than, you know, pull a gun out of your glove box and fight back. If somebody rolls up on you and wants to do harm to you. With a gas station, you could just throw it in gear and drive away. Yeah, you'll rip the gas pump off. You know, the station might go on fire. Mm-hmm. Right, I know, but you know, you will cause chaos and carnage by doing that. But you can get away. With EVs, you cannot. While you're plugged in and charging, the vehicle will not go into drive. And once the bad people know that, there will be occasional instances. I don't want to, you know, fear, putting fear into everyone, but it can happen. So somehow, whether it's the vehicle, the charger, or a third party device, something has to be developed to allow people in those rare instances, they have to be able to get away. And EV Ejector came up with this solution. Right. It works. I used it. Is it the best solution? At this point, it's the only solution. So, Tesla took offense to it and has now sent EVject, was entered into a lawsuit with EVject.
Well, that'll be an interesting case to cover, I guess, to follow.
I've long said about the supercharging network, for a company that maintains such a tight hold on your car, I mean, they can effectively disable your car remotely. They've talked about how cars aren't used very much. And the CEO has talked about how all this compute is just sitting in your driveway and how he'd like to use it. And there was no talk of compensating you for that. Talking about using the cameras on your cars to train computers and things. And people opt into that willingly. They love being part of this social experiment that's happening with self-driving cars. And it's always amazed me for a company that maintains such a tight hold on this product that you buy the car, but you can't ever, you know, if Tesla went bust and went away, the cars would be useless. It's like with Fisker, but it would be better because there'd be third parties and there'd be support. And I had a Pebble watch back in the pre-Apple days. You know, there's a product called Rebel that carried on for a while, got bought by Fitbit and Google and stuff, and people did their own thing, but eventually that all dies and stuff. Without the car companies, the cars are useless. And yet the supercharging network, I'm surprised until now Tesla hasn't had a tighter grip around it in terms of just things like this and usage of it and usage of the name and things like that. Because if I owned it and personally, if it was my thing, that is a crown jewel. You know, supercharging network's incredible. Mm-hmm. And I'd be really protective of it. And I think they are rightly proud of it. I don't see very much damage at them. I've seen broken dispensers before, and then I've seen them again, you know, fixed and nice new ones dropped in with a little netting and stuff around. And they get they really do look after them. And so it's my experience anyway. And I wouldn't want anyone doing anything like different connectors and things like that. I probably wouldn't have opened it up to third parties. But that's a whole bigger conversation. So I'm surprised they haven't before been more protective over their thing. I certainly would have done.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on. I think, Kyle, let's talk leafs and leases for a second. Apparently, your local Nissan dealer had this crazy deal on Nissan Leaf leases, basically giving them away, the Nissan Leaf, and at least one of your friends picked one up, and you made a video about the sweet deal and put up some tweets, and I understand the dealership went through dozens of them over the next few days after that, and they even turned around and put your name on their official paperwork, like Kyle approved, with the out-of-spec seal. So tell us how good this deal is, and so we can regret not living in Colorado.
Well, they're sold out. We sold 100 cars in one day. Not just dozens. There was 100 gone.
Right. Boom. Right.
And that ate into their future shipments as well. So that's crazy. So it's not even worth talking about it because you just can't get the deal. So I went in there. I heard, so my friend Tommy at TFL texted me and said, I got a cheap Leaf for whatever their deal was. It was like $3,000 down, $9 a month. I'm like, that's crazy. Wow. I'm going to go to my dealer and see if I can go match that or whatever. And then I'll pick up a Leaf because, like, why not? That's hilarious. And I was like, my buddy Danny needs a car. He's our dog sitter. I'm like, I'll get him a Leaf just to bomb around town. So I ended up going to our dealer, and we already knew them because we have a relationship with Fort Collins Kia where we just sold all their EV6 inventory off a video. So they already like us. And I was like, look, if you can give us the craziest Leaf deal imaginable, like make $0, but you just have a ton of Leafs sitting on the lot. Let's just clear them out completely. And they're like, okay, yeah, I think we could probably do something. And they gave me a $500 down, $9 or $19 a month with all taxes and fees included. So even thousands of dollars less than the TFL Boulder Nissan deal. It was crazy.
And, 2 years.
Two years. Lease. Yeah, of course, because then the incentives get applied over 2 years. So
that's less like $1,000.
It's less than $1,000 for 2 years.
It's a free car.
It's a free car. Insurance costs more than the car. Basically they all sold out. We met tons of viewers and, it was really, really great, I would say. So, they're gone. Yeah. So a friend of mine got 10 of them. So, you know, it's not just like one buddy got one, like a bunch of my friends got them. And that was like that's for hilarious. His friends and family and other people, and they got one or two. But shout out to Dan for like bringing everyone to the dealer and just making sure everyone he knew is now driving a Leaf.
Right on. So this is Danny.
Is his name? So this is Danny here in the video.
Okay. So yeah. So I think you were saying somewhere that he's, you know, more of a gearhead. He's very much into ice cars and stuff, but you know, free car.
Well, he's not really a car enthusiast, but he's just old school. He just drives a 90s Buick. He's one of those people that just isn't researching cars very much.
Right.
He's getting into it, of course. And since he started watching our dogs and we've, you know, Danny's been a family friend of Alyssa's for a long time. But he's been driving around the Cybertruck and the Plaid and some other stuff. And that really convinced him, like, holy smokes, EVs are kind of cool. I wouldn't say he was like an EV hater. He was just like, there's no way that can work. And never thought to research if they could because he just didn't care.
Right.
And so now he's come around to it and he's rolling in the Leaf. And I don't know. He hasn't driven it much. I was in the car yesterday. Only had 100 miles on it. But I don't know. He's liking it. Whatever.
Right on. That's cool. That was a fun video. So people want to check that out. That's on Out of Spec Reviews, I believe. And yeah. So in your video, you also had an A to Z CCS to a CHA demo adapter that you've been testing with, I guess. Are you putting out a video on that?
Not yet. It's still buggy. Still needs some work. But yes, it works at almost every station except Magic Dock right now.
Okay.
We actually got a software update from them, and it allows the Leaf, which was stuck in CHAdeMO, to CCS charge. And I've done probably 30 sessions with it so far, maybe more. And on the first software update, it kind of worked at like half the stations. Now it seems to work at almost all. And it's bulky. It's expensive. I'm not sure it's really for a mass market audience. But it's cool that at least you can now CCS charge a Leaf. But again, Leafs still do not do well with DC charging. So it's really just in a pinch. Just it's a city car. Just keep it in the city.
So it charges like slower than a Chevy Bolt EV, like 46 kilowatts. Is that the deal?
No, Leafs will do 100 kilowatts on the big battery. Oh, really? Yeah.
Oh, on the big battery. Okay. For some reason, I looked up last night, the AI, I guess, must have got the AI answer.
Yeah, you can't kilowatts. Listen to the AI answers.
I know.
Results, they're always wrong. But Kyle, I mean, up until now, they really haven't been able to access the 100 kilowatt here in North America, right? Because the Chatham stations weren't able to put out that. No,
there were a few. There's a couple in Virginia, and there's a couple in California that are 100 kilowatt Chatham.
Okay, yeah. All it's just not many. You know, there's a couple in the whole country. But this should allow, if it works as it's advertised, which, full disclosure, I have one of them also. I made a video on it. I haven't been able to get mine to work. They're sending me a new one. So Kyle's had better success with it than I have. This first batch of them that are going out, everybody's kind of beta testers. Kyle's even found some things that reported back to A to Z, and they made software updates. So mine, I think there's just a problem with mine. It's just it didn't work. So I'm waiting to get another one. But it should allow people to charge the CCS stations. If you find CCS stations that can deliver the amps, that will allow it to charge at a higher rate. But like Kyle said, this isn't going to be for the vast majority of Leaf owners. Although I will tell you, I've had some people reach out to me and say, a couple times a year I go on a long drive with my Leaf, and it's been a bear finding working stations and waiting. So yeah, I'll pay the money. I know it's a lot, but I want this in my car when I go on a road trip. So there's going to be a market for it. Not a huge market, but there's going to be a market for it.
Yeah. We want to do a Leaf race to Vegas, which will be really fun. The thing is, actually the smaller battery Leaf is a better road tripper than the big battery Leaf. And the reason is they're all air cooled batteries. So there's no active thermal management. So on the big 62 kilowatt hour, which is now badged as 60 kilowatt hour, weirdly on the new cars, that one now fills up the entire battery pack of cells. So there's no air gap to expel the heat into, whereas the 40 kilowatt hour pack has some room, at least inside the pack, to dissipate heat. And rapid gate is still very much a thing for Leafs if you do repetitive DC sessions. But the Leaf trick is to actually charge deep, charge up to 85-90% on a DC charger, and then manage your speeds on the way to the next charger. Mm-hmm. And the airflow coming underneath the car should give it enough time where you can get another okay charging session. I will say my e-Golf is also air-cooled and does a much better job of cooling than the Leaf does. But I have rapid-gated my Golf as well.
Interesting. All right. So Tom, speaking of, while we're on in adapter mode here, you have a video coming up soon. I understand you've been testing the Typhoon Pro S NAX to CCS1 adapter from A to Z as well. Is this the same one you tested before, but with improvements? What is this thing?
Yeah, so A to Z has their, they call it the Typhoon adapter. I did videos on it. This is it right here. This is the NACS to CCS1 adapter that allows authorized vehicles, currently that's only Tesla and Ford vehicles, to charge at Tesla superchargers. Nice adapter. I've used this dozens of times already. Really, this was probably my favorite of the three adapters. I even liked it better than the official Tesla adapter. But I didn't like this manual lock on the bottom. The biggest problem, see under here, you have to lock it into place once you connect the adapter and then unlock it in order to remove the Tesla connector. So that to me was like a fatal flaw. Like, it was really a pain. There were four or five times where I forgot to lock it, even though I know I'm supposed to do this, and the car wasn't charging. I'm like, oh wow, I think the adapter fried or something. And then I'm like, idiot, and then pull the lock. So if I did that, I could imagine how many other people, are frustrated by it not working. So that was that was to me the biggest issue. So now they came out with, they called this the Typhoon Pro, Okay. And they eliminated the need to have the lock. See, there's no lock now. You notice you could see two screws. Mm-hmm. This is a prototype. There's going to be rubber covers on these screws. You won't see that. But other than that, it's the same adapter. And now this one button on the top releases both sides. It's kind of cool. When you press it down to here, you see the CCS side lift to release. Now mm-hmm. it hits that point there. Then you press further, and then the NACS on the inside, wrong way. You might be able to see it here. Okay, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
You could see that. So now look, yeah. I pressed down, the J1772 is release, or the CCS1's releasing, but the NACS isn't, right? Now watch when right. I press it all the way.
Oh,
see that? So it's okay. almost like it's like a two-stage switch, and it's a good design. It one switch will release both. And they also did a nice improvement here. You could see on the top, there's this little guard here. So if you drop it, now this can still hit, but you know, mm-hmm. between this side hitting and this guard hitting, you have a good chance of not breaking it. These adapters are heavy, and I've noted this in all my reviews. You drop this from 4 or 5 feet, and it lands right on the top of that pin. Even though the A to Z ones are metal, this locking mechanism is metal. It's not plastic. You'll still break it. They're not light. And this one's even heavier. This one's like 2 pounds, 7.5 ounces or something like that. This is super heavy. I mean, this is a weapon. You hit someone with this, they're going down. So you might not need an EV jack. Just carry one of these things. If someone comes up to your car, just start swinging and you'll be okay. But so it's an improvement. Cost a little more. The first version now, which they've sunset now, they don't sell this one anymore, was $197. This one here is $215. But just like this one, if somebody does want to buy it, use State of Charge coupon code, you get 10% off. So that drops it down under $200. It's like $193, I think. And they're going to start shipping these in about 2 weeks. This is a good adapter. I like this one. And I know A to Z is working with a few manufacturers right now to try to get them to say, yeah, we're comfortable with this. We endorse its use, because that's all they need. All these companies like Lectron and A to Z need is one manufacturer to say, we approve this. And now mm-hmm. all of a sudden it's an approved adapter for, let's say, you know, use on EVgo or Electrify America, because all the companies have said, we only recommend using adapters that were approved by your manufacturer. So we'll see. But I don't think any of the adapters are going to be officially endorsed until UL2252 is completed and they're UL certified. That mm-hmm. said, we saw rumblings online that GM is going to approve the Lectron adapter, which is a little surprising. I like the Lectron adapter. For me, it worked fine, but how many people have we seen online post pictures of them laying on the ground attached to a Tesla's connector because it won't release. If you remember, it had the initial problem was it would pull out too easily. Lectron overcorrected it. Now people can't get it off. And, so they had, and that's just a tolerance issue on the inside of here, and that's just a manufacturing thing. There's nothing technically wrong with the adapter. It's just a manufacturing tolerance issue. Hopefully they have that worked out now, but it sounds like GM is going to officially endorse that. And I think it's probably, I mean, I don't know, it's speculation, but the fact that Tesla can't produce these fast enough. GM customers, mm-hmm. Rivian customers are all complaining. I get tons of emails from people saying, Tom, I reserved this on June 15th. When do you think I'm going to get one? I don't know when you're going to get it. Rivian isn't telling me. Ford isn't telling me. Although I've sent emails to say, look, can you give me a schedule? Can you help me tell the people when they can expect them? Ford gives people estimated dates in the emails, but they're wrong. I've had people say, they said it was coming in June. It's now the end of July. I still don't have it yet. Tesla can't make them fast enough. So I'm thinking that GM understands that and is going to say, we don't want to anger all of our customers. So what we'll do is we'll certify another one. So that way they have the choice. Look, you could buy one from us. You can buy one here. But now you have choices, because I would imagine that they're not going to get many of them. And they're going to get tons of orders, and they don't want to. That might even be what's holding up this whole GM officially doing it. They might not want to open up their vehicles to superchargers until they know their customers can get adapters. That's pure speculation, but that could be one of the things. Because why else is it? For a couple of months now, it's been any day now. And, they had promised that you'd have supercharger access in spring. And then they even doubled down on that. Like when spring was a week from ending, they're like, oh, yeah, we haven't changed our official statement. Spring 2024, you'll have access. You know, it's going to be August next week. And, fall's coming. So,
we saw a few superchargers kind of turned on, so people were kind of spoofing it, telling the superchargers they were in a Ford and actually they were in a Chevy or GM product, and be able to charge on Tesla supercharger, but that's probably cut off now, right?
They've tested, a few. There's been a couple of days, I think 3 days so far, individual days where GM vehicles could charge, and then at the end of the day, they couldn't. So that's Tesla opening it up to let GM engineers do some testing and so forth. So, and Maki Vlog said that, I don't understand how a small company like A to Z could be producing more than of these adapters than Tesla. I don't know if they necessarily are. It's just, Ford has shipped thousands of these, and Rivian has shipped, I don't know how many, but I know Ford shipped a lot of them already. I don't know. And I know, the A to Z one's made in China. The Tesla one, I believe, is made in the U.S. They might have a smaller facility making it. Listen, Tesla's primary job isn't making adapters. The factory that A to Z is using to make these, that might be their primary job. They might be able to pump out more. So we'll see.
Right. All right. Hey, Kyle, a couple of weeks ago, you were in Europe and you showed us all kinds of cool cars. We talked about lots of cars, and you drove the BYD Dolphin and posted a video about that after the show when we talked about that car. But you also drove the BYD Seal, sorry. But you also drove the BYD Dolphin, which is other BYD car, part of the Ocean series. I think they have the Seagull too, which is smaller and cheaper. But you drove the Dolphin, and that's like a size of around the same size and price, I think, as a Chevy Bolt EV. So I was just wondering, so people can look up that review if they like on your reviews channel. But would you take a Seagull over a Bolt?
Probably, yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Charges faster.
What was the charging speed of the Seagull?
I don't remember, but it's in the video, I think. The video is not really a review. It was just a quick test drive.
Right. It is a quick little blast. It does roast the tires, though. I think your video starts out with that, which just tells me actually that they don't have like the ESC really figured out or something.
No, I don't think.
I see. Right. Okay. That makes sense then. Yeah. I was going to say, that's like, because you don't have to do that in the Chevy Bolt EV. If you, I guess it doesn't really, I think you need to be into a turn, accelerating into a turn in the Bolt to get the inside wheel to kind of.
Yeah, but they also ramp the power on smoothly in the Bolt, where this gives you everything at zero. It's awesome.
Oh, really? Okay. Right on. So the interior, even, you like the interior better?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Because I like the Bolt EV interior, especially after the refresh.
I do not.
Decent. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Nope. Was it materials or just the layout of things?
It just makes me feel worse about my day. But I like the Bolt in general. Like, I like that it's thermally cooled and like it's a fine car, but they don't make it anymore. So you can't even buy a new Bolt. This is on sale. Not in our market, of course. So it's, it's really Bolt version 2. I'm really looking forward to the next gen Bolt with LFP, which this Dolphin has LFP, so should be a little bit more comparable. But I don't know if you guys saw the news, since we're on the topic of GM. Did you see their announcement yesterday? It's not electric at all.
I'm not sure. Oh, the ZR1 thing?
Yeah. Holy smokes. 1,064 horsepower, twin turbo V8, no electric assist, rear drive, straight America. Love it. And on pump gas, over 1,000 horsepower on pump gas. You don't even need E85. Wow. It's crazy. Amazing. So go watch Carlos Lago at Car and Driver did a great video on that car, because our car enthusiasm spans beyond electric. That's amazing engineering. So go watch that to our EV audience. It's awesome. We're living in the best of combustion and the best of electric right now.
Yeah, and for me, I think that's like a target for like EV manufacturers, EV makers. They have to be better than that somehow. Like, that's difficult because of the weight issue. Because we can make all kinds of power with electrics, but we can't. There's a penalty for the weight of the battery.
1,000 horsepower for $85,000. We're way ahead on the power to price ratio, but it's not just about that. But
it's not just about power, though. Yeah.
The ZR1, they claim, is actually faster than Plaid and Sapphire once you're up and rolling. They're only two-wheel drive. So, at the end of the day, this is a very niche product. It's going to probably be $250,000, and it's represents a pinnacle of combustion American engineering. It's awesome.
Interesting.
And, so basically take this engine, we imagine, we don't know for sure, put the E-Ray electric front motor on it, and that is what we imagine the Zora will be, which will be like 1,300 horsepower. It's going to be crazy. Who knows?
I've never heard of the Zora. What's the Zora?
That's the crazy one.
Okay.
Take this with electric assist.
There's never been a Corvette Zora thing before, though, right? I've heard of ZR1s before.
Yeah, but there's the rumors of Zora, which is going to be the big boy. This is already insane.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if it's an accelerated Plaid or a Sapphire, once you roll on, and with two-wheel drive, that's a whole lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah, there's 215 miles an hour. You can do it with the roof down in the convertible, too, which is awesome. It's so great. I can't wait to drive one. I'm sure I'll be lucky enough to have the opportunity once they hit the review fleet. So you'll see a video from me coming on this at some point. But yeah, it's crazy.
Right. Mm. Jeff Keenan says he is a C8 Corvette as well as a Model 3 Performance and Quad Motor Rivian. So yeah, perfect, the audience does.
Perfect garage right there. That's awesome. You get the weekend blaster, the car hauler, and just a great daily driver.
Here we go. Mike the Car Geek, of course, living up to his name. Zora Arkas Dontov is the first chief engineer, I guess. Well, there you go. That answers that. Okay. Oh, Bud's laying down some. Bud Tarrant says, still, I bet Navarro wipes the floor with a ZR1. Big smile. But, I mean, those are pretty good numbers. I don't know. It would be interesting to see.
How much is a Navarro?
How much does it cost? Yeah. Oh, $25 million.
No.
Was it 2.3 million?
$25 million, but over $2 million.
I forgot the decimal point.
Yes. And the Corvette is gonna be like, we don't know pricing, but my guess is $250,000.
Right. Right. But the Navarro there's a lot of things though that the ZR1 won't. Maybe performance wise, I don't know, but and on a track
totally imagine this. You're talking
hypercar
against sports car. Not even the same category, but this is cool. This is like what's really impressive to me about this is it's pump gas. Anyone can just go buy it at a dealer, two wheel drive. They just dialed it up to 11. We don't need to keep, I'm sorry I brought it up on this show, but it's just amazing.
That's all right. Can we take it back to batteries for a second? Cause I want to talk about the Rivian R1S LFP pack. You did a video with Jordan on this. You've had one there with LFP pack for testing. Jordan did a range test on it at 70 miles an hour. He got, I think, was it 241 miles, which is pretty good, right? 2.6 miles per kilowatt hour. But you have a video talking about a huge improvement in the charging times, because you just did a video a couple weeks ago about charging the Rivian R1S LFP pack, right?
Yeah, so we did that video in anticipation of this update coming. Rivian's been promising this update since the launch of the car, and they really did shave significant time off the 0 to 100, over 15 minutes. I think it was 16 minutes saved from 0 to 100%. And that's the original curve that we're looking at here, very prototypey, very stair-steppy, and the new curve is much smoother, much nicer. But still room for improvement. There's still things we'd like to see better here. But, kind of like if you're getting a Rivian, you just need to get the standard base one with no options, unless you need ultimate performance or ultimate range for the few trips a year. Because the thing with this is they recommend 100% daily charging, and you can use all of it. It's going to be really cool.
Daily jailing 100.
Yeah, it's LFP.
Okay, I know, but I think, but like Tesla only recommends like 100% just to, you know, to for the battery.
Yeah, BMS, so the spirit kind of it is, you're totally right. The spirit of it is every so often charge to 100%, but Rivian recommends setting the charge limit to 100%. And so does Tesla. You will degrade them faster by, of course, charging them to 100% all the time, but it's LFP. Right. There's huge cycle life. There's probably not much to worry about.
Okay. Right on. So how much did it shorten the charge time by?
16 minutes or so.
That's from 0 to 100?
Yes.
Wow. That's significant, I think.
Well, we knew it was coming. The way to look at it is not that they improved it this much, but that they launched it choked and now have opened it up to what it should be.
Yeah. I mean, to say 16 minutes to 0 to 100, nobody's going to charge that. I'm interested in what like the 20 to 80 improvement would be. What do you think, Kyle, if you're able to guess, because I know you didn't do a 20 to 80, 10 minutes maybe?
Part of the test is a 20 to 80, right?
So yeah.
we go there, we can just start the timer and we can end at 80. So someone can do the math. I haven't looked.
Just Jordan curious,
video clips, you know? But probably eight minutes, somewhere around there.
To say, you know, oh, it charges 16 minutes faster is a little, you know, it's like giving the full charge time when we talk about EVs, and nobody does that. You know, when but you're on a road trip.
We got a benchmark, though.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. I mean, and that's why I do it. I do it also when I'm doing recordings. But it's just what is the real tangible savings for most people on a road trip? You know what I mean? And you got to look at 10 to 80 or 20 to 80 for that. I think
I actually don't agree. I think so many people, we just put this 10% to 80% industry standard blanket on so much charging. I don't see people doing that in the real world. Very rarely do I see people doing 10 to 80s. I see people doing 3%, 2% arrivals, 1% arrivals, and charging to 50%. I see them charging to 70%. I see them going to full. And I just think there's no, I think we have to show everything, which Tom, you do as well. I know you agree with me. And then you have to quantify off the full charge recording. I don't think we can just make up the, you know, 10 to 80 is industry standard, but I don't actually like it.
Well, I agree with you to a point with people aren't timing it to pull up a 10% or 80%. I tend to, the people that I talk to mostly are afraid to go down to 2 or 3%. Like you said, I'm thinking people on road trips that I talk to feel comfortable at around 10%. They don't even feel comfortable going much lower than 10%, just because they rarely do that when they're daily driving and they're afraid it's going to just shut off at 3% or something. But I get what you're saying. There is no standard. Like it could be 8% to 77%, you know, 14% to 91%. There's no set. It's just, I know people aren't going 0 to 100. Very, very few people are going to do that. But we have to show the whole thing.
Yeah, and then people can just make up whatever they want. I mean, at the end of the day, this is the charging curve that in theory is the base charging curve for the truck. They just didn't have it ready in time for start of production, but the cars just went on sale. So this is really the reason I posted the video a few weeks ago was to try and force Rivian to get this update in the vehicles as soon as possible.
Yeah. Well, I got an update yesterday with the new cell shading on the infotainment system.
Oh, nice.
And the blind spot cameras now show up on my driver's display. I just got it last night, so I haven't really fully.
Because it's been out for like months.
I got it last night. Maybe it was sent out when I was on vacation. But just yesterday was the first time that I saw the update. You have an update waiting, and I clicked on it and checked it out. So I haven't seen it, and I didn't know. I don't think it was out before I was on vacation. Really, more than 2 weeks ago.
Yes, I think it was because I've had it on.
It's been a while.
Even my truck before it went in for service, and my truck's been in for service for a month and 2 days today, and I pick it up today.
Okay. Well, I mean. All right. I'd be interested to hear from followers, too, to say when they got it, because I didn't think it was out that long.
Yeah. Because Rivian Tracker knows the date. It went out.
I, I remember when we did the the drive, and they said, you know, it was coming within, you know, in a month or so. I remember a month had passed and people were saying, hey, where is this? You said it was going to happen by the end of the month, and it still wasn't out yet. So I missed when it came out. But it anyway, I got it. I finally got it.
We got it. We had it. It came out when we had the R1S for Race to Vegas. And that was how many months ago, Dominic? That was over 1 month ago.
It's about a month ago.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Christian just said, I got that the end of June. Okay. So yeah. Well, they held off. They didn't give it to me.
Anyway. And why is your truck been in for a month and 2 days?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to find out today what the heck they did. I gave them a list of, you know, I'm getting near the end of the warranty period. I said, here's everything I want you to check. Alignment, new
brake
motors. But also like my Bluetooth module stopped working. I hit a, came off a ledge off-roading and knocked a parking sensor out of the bumper. It's not all just that. But then I also had issues DC charging and some other stuff. And so they just, I was just like, take all the time you need to fix this. And they gave us an R1S quad motor. So I've been, Alyssa's been driving that. And it's been great.
That's cool. I didn't know if it was something like the Cybertruck issue where they wanted it back to do something because Tesla wanted your Cybertruck back for the new motor or motors at some point, but it was you initiated this. That's okay.
Yeah, I just scheduled service and I'd been putting it off for months because every time it came close to dropping it off, I was like, we need the truck for something. So it just went in. It's the big, it needed a new like amplifier for the sound system because I had to go to full volume a lot and it wasn't getting loud. Just like lots of little stuff. I'll have a little video on whatever it is. My Cybertruck goes in now on August 7th for the new motor.
Interesting. Okay. That'll be cool. Looking forward to that video. That'll be very interesting.
Yeah.
Did it go in for other things already and come back to Cybertruck, or is this the first time it's going in?
No, it went in already.
Okay.
Yes, of course.
All right. Cool. Looking forward to hearing how that works up with the new motor.
Yeah.
Me too.
So, Dom, before we jump on to another thing, somebody that watching the podcast that's in the know sent me an email of the EVject lawsuit. So it wasn't just a trademark infringement. Let me read briefly on this. Plaintiff requested and paid for a third-party engineering team to conduct a design review, physical teardown, precision measurement, microscopy, and CT imaging of the EVject escape connector for analysis against relevant charging connector standards. Plaintiff alleges the EVject escape connector's design and construction poses a high safety risk. For purposes of the analysis, high safety risk includes a major injury, fatality, or fire is expected to occur during the lifetime of the device, for which no controls exist. Plaintiff alleges the EVject escape connector poses a high safety risk for at least the following reasons, and it goes on and on and on. So it's not just a trademark infringement. What Tesla is saying is that it's unsafe and people are going to get hurt if they use it.
Wow. Well, that's some serious language for sure. I'm not sure what to say about that, but definitely serious. All right.
Yeah, this is the adapters are scary. There's no way around it. And this is why I've been personally so hesitant to do anything with adapters, but I understand why people need to use them. I, of course, have used the EVject adapter. I've never recommended anyone to ever do it, but I have used it for some things. And even during my use on my Cybertruck, which I'm charging at much lower current than you would be at a supercharger, I've noticed some weird things with the latch not responding sometimes. And I'm just like, I don't know. And I haven't used it in a while. It kind of freaked me out a little bit. So I was just like, let's just only use adapters when absolutely necessary. Even the Leaf CHAdeMO CCS thing goes against terms of service of networks. Mm-hmm. Like EA does not want you using this adapter, you know, to charge a Leaf. EVgo doesn't want you using that adapter to charge on CCS on EVgo. And so adapters are really You know, no major CPO likes them. Now, I'm glad I have my own DC equipment. I can play around with it. If I blow up my own charger, who cares? But you know, it's still like, you have to understand, you're going to spend $1,000 for this adapter. I'm talking not EVject. I'm talking specifically on that Leaf CHAdeMO CCS thing. And because the adapter has to handle the communications between the charger and the adapter and the adapter and the car differently, Tom and I were talking about this yesterday, the CPOs can actually pick up on the fingerprint of that adapter and just block the charging session. It can say, oh, we recognize this as the CCS to CHAdeMO adapter. Nope, adapters are not allowed, because this is now the first time an adapter has been powered and has logic to communicate in between. Not the first time, but the first time on CCS that you'd be doing this. So yeah, I think we're going to start to see a real fight against adapters from automakers, from CPOs, and I don't even know if any of them will be officially approved. We'll see.
I think it all hinges on, as I said, the UL standard. Once that's formally adopted, I believe the adapters that are past this, that have that UL stamp on it or an ETL stamp, I think it's the automakers are going to feel comfortable with that. We'll see. But you know, I do believe that's going to be the linchpin. We have to have some sort of a governing body that certifies things as safe to certify them as safe. Because right now, and there was a comment in the stream that said it's the wild, wild west for adapters. And it is right now. Anybody can make an adapter and put it on Amazon and people will buy it. And there's a lot of really crappy adapters out there. But there is no governing body that has said, okay, we're going to certify them. UL started it now with 2252. They claim that certification body, it was close to being done from what I understand. But then a few automakers chimed in and said, nah, I want you to change this and change that. And that's delayed it a little bit, but I think they're on target to having it formalized by fall, hopefully. And then we'll start getting adapter certified. And then, you know, when as far as I'm concerned, if it has a UL stamp on it, I'm comfortable with it.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, as long as, from my perspective, as long as someone takes liability for using the adapter, I'm cool with it. I mean, I wouldn't even go so far as to say I need UL. I just think if something were to go wrong, if there's a fire, if there's a death, if there's an injury, who, you know, will the automaker who approved the adapter or Tesla who approved the adapter cover that in the case? And if it's an approved adapter used in an approved way, even if it's unsafe, at least someone can, you know, the liability falls on someone. Or at least could. I'm not saying it would, but it could.
Right. Okay. Let's move on to some news real quick. On Monday, Cadillac decided to surprise the world by revealing the Soleil concept. So this is a two-door, four-seater convertible that feels very much like a throwback to the glory days of the brand. In fact, the Manila cream color they chose for it was originally used on the Cadillacs in 1957-58. Martin, I have a little highlight link here on the show notes. I think Autoblog's got some great pictures. Yeah, you got it there. Or you got it from Newsroom. So yeah, this thing looks, to me, it looks pretty amazing. So we don't need to spend a whole lot of time on this since it's just a concept, but it seems very likely to go into production. So Cadillac didn't give away much in the way of details beyond like talking about the colors and materials and different things. But from what I understand, this is basically a Cadillac Celestiq with fewer doors and a roof made out of metallic fabric. And there's obviously a few styling changes you need to make when you go from a sedan to a coupe. If that's the case, though, and it is a Celestiq underneath all of that, when it goes into production, like I suspect it will, the price should probably start even higher than the Celestiq, which is like $340,000, and it will probably be hand-built, like in the same place as the Celestiq. So Tom, I absolutely love the idea of cruising across the countryside in this thing, but is Cadillac completely off its rocker here? are there enough people with like this kind of money, you know, spending money who want a convertible to make this even remotely feasible? Or is this like, or do you see this as a way for Cadillac to cover its bet on producing the Celestiq?
It's just a halo car. You know, they can't sell a lot of these. I think it looks awesome. You know, I don't know why they couldn't make a watered down version of this for, you know, 70 grand, you know, but right? Yeah, you know, it's not that outrageous that it should cost that much, but you know, you have to factor in the low volume that it's going to bring in that yeah. right brings across it. But I think it looks cool as hell. But I mean, you know, I don't really spend a lot of time focusing on the cars that cost $300,000-$400,000. I wish they would have poured all the money that they put into these super ultra high end vehicles into just trying to drive down the price of the Bolt EV or an entry level EV. This to me, you know, I know these car companies need to do it. They're like, you know, they're halo cars, quote unquote, but I wish they would, you know, just focus on bringing cars to people that can afford, you know, affordable cars. And I mean, how much money do you think they put into these programs that they could have, you know, potentially spent trying to make their lower cost EVs more efficient and driving down the cost of them. So, you know, I know all car companies do this. They love to show off what they can do, but I think it's, you know, I wouldn't go in that direction. I would really, if I was in charge of a car company, I would really be doing everything I can to focus on entry level affordable EVs and get them out there as soon as possible.
I just have a question, which is, how did this become the leading title for our podcast today?
Because I had to do it. And I didn't know
of
what
course,
else.
A concept car becomes our leading title when you title the show.
Yeah.
It looks interesting, at least.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I had to put show. See, because we need to put it like a thumbnail out, and there were no other new cars, and it's a pretty awesome looking car, so I put that on a thumbnail, so I should mention it in the title as well. But yeah, I get your point. I hear you. Because we're only going to talk about this for a little bit. We talked about adapters for so much longer.
I'm pretty sure we talked about the ZR1 longer than we're going to talk about the Soleil.
Let's face it, we can't have the ZR1 as a headline on the Batteries Included podcast.
Yeah. I mean, we could. That'd be cool. Yeah. But I actually really like this thing. I hope they make it. Celestiq is awesome and baller, and I think every car company needs a halo car. And it shouldn't be that much of an engineering challenge to chop the roof off of it, which is what basically this is. And, you know, Celestiq isn't even into series production yet. They're building them, I think, in the prototype shop where they build a lot of their pre-series vehicles. So they are hand-built, but they're hand-built in the same shop that, like, builds the very early media cars and all of the other stuff mm-hmm. where, like, every tolerance is totally taken care of. I think it's cool, but I hope they build it, and I can't wait till they're 60 grand in 3 years.
So also, the Polestar 6 is coming in 2026, and it's only $200,000. So Kyle, Cadillac or Polestar?
Yeah, both used.
Yeah.
Okay.
you could buy both of them for less than $200,000 in just a matter of years. So just wait a little bit.
This car, new,
because it's only 50 grand and it's Chinese. And
50
and they,
grand.
And they, so they said, let's go do something ridiculous. And then they went and made it. So that's just because they can do it, because they're Chinese. So that's, and this is okay. Like, this is, so they said they wanted to do it and they went and made it and it's okay. And I've not seen anyone driving around. I've not seen a real customer driving around in one yet.
I'm looking forward to that. You've pulled up the MG Cyberster. So that's what we're looking at on our screens here now. That's what we're talking about. So you say $50,000?
Oh, it's because it says on screen available August 24th. So they haven't shipped them. They haven't come off the boat yet in Bristol or Southampton, wherever they're going to come in. So that's why I've not seen anybody. But shout out to my little buddy who I see flying around in his Fisker around here. I was in the car park to Aldi. Do you guys get Aldi? It's like a German... Yeah, European discount brand. If they have the same model in the US,
we've got a bunch of them here. At least Northeast. So,
Yeah, right. So we like Aldi because it's cheap. And my little buddy who drives his Fisker, he swung into the Aldi. And I'm like, well, you're saving your money on your salad and your bananas because you spent it all on a... you're the only person in the UK with one. So shout out to him. But yeah, that's what happens to any MG Cybersters because they're not on the road yet. But yeah, that's the difference between Cadillac and the Chinese. They let's do something bonkers. And then actually it's not that bonkers and it's only 50 grand and it's actually pretty good and people will actually buy it. So...
I thought it was going to be like 70 grand.
I think it starts at 55. I think the small battery 55. The single motor is 55, I think.
Okay. Because I watched the Car Wow review with Matt Watson.
Let's see the configurator. No, I'm rubbish at consuming content unless it's pure EV stuff. So there's only so many hours in the day. But yeah, single motor 55. There you go. Let's configure that and put an order in.
Okay, yeah, because I'm kind of interested in this because there's not a whole lot of in the way of convertibles, and obviously it's coming to the Europe at least. I want to like it because it's convertible, and I like convertibles, so this would be a more affordable one. But
it's a nice
if any of you all, Kyle, you didn't happen to see any reviews on this, did you?
I haven't, no.
Okay, because Matt was kind of brutal in his I don't know what was going on.
Yeah, but his garage has had how many, Porsches and stuff over the years, and so that's where he'll be coming from. But
right, but Matt, yeah, because he was like nitpicking it, like everything on it.
Well,
it was
of
like,
course.
Well, I don't know. I've seen some reviews. I saw some reviews when it first came out in China, and the reviewer there was loved it, and it was lovely. But I don't know if they could really drive it like performance style there.
Yeah, but also I think we said this a couple of weeks ago, maybe last week, was that the Chinese cars in China make total sense, and then the Chinese cars outside of China are missing the final 5%.
Right.
So, yeah. But that's because this isn't a Boxster. Well, I mean, a Boxster would be cheaper than this, but that's because it's not an entry-level Porsche. So, yeah.
Right.
They had plenty of time to dial in and get right and all those things. So that's where MG will fall down. I think there was some of the feedback after they showed the car off at one of the Fully Charged shows, maybe the Fully Charged one in London, when the car was on stage. It was like, yeah, it looks fantastic. And then when you get in it and play with the software, I've not seen Matt's review. It's like, oh, okay, there's something, just this final thing missing here on a premium car.
Mm. Yeah. All right. What was I going to mention? I don't know. Oh, just that the... So if we want a convertible, I think the real choice for us over here in the U.S. is like next year, the Porsche, was it 718 version? But I'm not sure what they're calling it right off the top of my head. But that's supposed to come out next... Oh, 718, basically. Mm-hmm. And they're not like the Macan, they're not saying EV or electric or anything.
We don't know that close yet. The car hasn't officially been revealed on the naming, right. But it'll be the 718 electric.
That's going to be an awesome car. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, there might be a doubt about it. It might have too little range because it's going to have a small battery. It could be too expensive. And I'm not sure that that's the kind of car we want electric yet, to be honest. There's certainly a small group of people who do, but I've spent a lot of time in Boxster and Cayman over the years, and that's a car that I like to go to mountain roads, drive hard, come back. And when you drive hard in an electric car, you chew through your battery. So even just doing one Angeles Crest run can smoke a battery in an EV. You could be gone in 30, 40 miles. And this is going to have a small battery. So who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, that's really where the promise of solid state batteries comes in, where you can get a lot of energy in a lot smaller space for cars like that. They're going to be higher price, especially at first, but there's on the screen there now the 718.
This is the one I'm most worried about, the new electric Cayenne that's coming. They just officially shared the pre-communication on that car, mm-hmm. with some prototype images showing, but this one being electric to me is this is scary.
Okay. So it'll be interesting to see how this pans out the next year when you actually get a chance to, or we all get a chance to see it. Oh, I saw this morning too. I'll just mention this. Wasim Rattel mentions that the Xiaomi SU7 Ultra will try to beat the Nürburgring record by October. So that's like a, I don't know if you're familiar with the Xiaomi SU7. They're selling 100,000 of the, they're on target to sell 100,000 of those things in the first 10 months of production. They've ramped up to 10,000 units like a month, and like they're just going full steam with that thing. It's very popular. It's like one of the most popular new EVs in China right now, I think. And there's a huge high-performance version of it now, a tri-motor, I believe, well over 1,000 horsepower that they think they can take the Taycan record away. I don't know. You drove the. You spent a lot of time in the Taycan. That's quite a challenge to beat that car, though, I think. I don't know. Do you think the Xiaomi can step up to that?
Probably, if they claim they can, yeah. I mean, there's room on the table. Always room on the table.
All right. So a little update on Rivian R2 pre-orders. The R2 got about 68,000 reservations in the first 24 hours when it was introduced earlier this year. So that pace has slowed considerably since then. But Rivian's vice president of manufacturing, Tim Fallon, reportedly said this week that pre-orders for the R2 have reached well over 100,000 now. So I believe this will also be sold in Europe, but I think reservations are only open now for US and Canada. So for anyone listening unfamiliar with the Rivian R2, it's basically a smaller Rivian R1S that will be considerably more affordable starting in the 45,000 neighborhood, they say. So Rivian's expanding its factory in Normal, Illinois, and they say that once that's ramped up, it could produce 155,000 of these a year. So, Martin, do these numbers look promising to you, 100,000 pre-orders at this point in the game, or does it seem like there will still be enough interest to support like full tilt production?
I don't know what Rivian gets out of sharing that number. Because it's either going to be too high or too low, depending on which way you come at it. And I get why they did the first 24 hours, but I kind of like since then RJ's had the take of leave us to it. We're going to go away and make the best thing we can make, and when we're ready to come back, and then we'll show you what we've made. And I kind of like that. So I'm surprised they shared new numbers, because you'll either come at it and go, well, you know, it's not Tesla. Although you right. might think Tesla could be doing better after this week, but or you say, well, no, that's not very good. That's not going to be enough. You can't. Oh, they're going to make it in Normal, obviously, but they will certainly want to scale it. Or you'll think, wow, that's a huge number. Congratulations on that. And so unless you mentioned it just now while I was bringing that website up, I don't know what the financial commitment was for the pre-orders on the R2. But you can. Oh, okay. So then, yeah. I mean, does it count? But
well, that's the question, Martin. Is how many of these pre-orders in history? We have historical context now. How many of them actually translate into sales? Because I know so many people that put $100 down for Cybertruck that have not gotten one or have decided not to get one.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And this happened over and over again. With what is a pre-order, what is an expression of interest, and if the numbers are good, then the car companies use them because they think it's a good number. But I don't know if it's a good idea to put the numbers out, because we're in this weird phase. 2024 has been a strange year where, well, your guys, your market is still near, you know, it's well over 50% Tesla in terms of your EV market. And so because they've been having a bit of a rough time of it, you know, all the headlines are, you know, the EV market is struggling. Well, over here, we've had some countries, you know, Italy, I think, was up 100-something% on the second quarter of the year or something. On the, you know, they've had some new incentives come out. Germany struggled. So again, European state by European state goes up and down, but it's much less of a bleak picture than I watch the US websites and the US media talking about EVs. And anyone would think that the whole EV idea has been cancelled when you read some of these headlines. And it's very, you know, obviously China is different. I think last month in June, Shenzhen hit 70% NEV. Now, of course, NEV is plug-in hybrid and BEV, but I think the majority is BEV. It's not Norway numbers. Sweden's over 50%. And so some of these places are looking at these headlines saying, like, where's that coming from? But again, I'd hate to be working at the car makers and trying to justify the money. So yeah, I guess a rambling answer to, I don't know if it's good or bad. I don't think anybody knows if 100,000 is good or bad.
Right.
Well, what do Rivian think it's good or bad? What was the gist of that why they gave the number.
This one guy saying it. It didn't come from like official communications or from RJ. So RJ just gave a big interview to the Verge, the website, the Verge. But that wasn't in that conversation at all. It was an interesting thing because I did want to mention that in that interview on The Verge, though, he did mention that the R3X, which is the high-performance kind of lifted version of the R3 hatchback that they showed at the same time as they revealed the R2, that will be made before the R3. So the R3 will be the affordable, everyday commuter hatchback version of that car. But the R3X is going to be out first, and that this follows the path that others have taken, releasing more expensive and more profitable versions of the cars first. Hey, I just wanted to ask about that. Tom, do you think this is the right strategy, or do you think they should make the enthusiasts wait a bit longer and just get right to the high volume version?
You know, they have to have a reason why they did it. It might generate a tremendous amount of interest up front. I don't think it's going to be that much later that they start selling the regular version. Could be like a month, right? I mean, they didn't announce any type of time frame. I mean, once these things start rolling off the assembly line, I know it's a different version. I can't imagine them not being able to scale up the regular version. But I think it might be smart because it's going to generate a tremendous amount of interest. It's going to be in the news. It's going to be people, you know, taking them out on tracks and just, you know, talking about how great it is. It's like the better version. So why not put your best foot forward, let the media consume it and build up more interest in the vehicle?
I agree, actually. Kyle, do you think if they're going to sell the R3X, shouldn't they also introduce an R3R, like a tri-motor street-oriented version that isn't lifted, that maybe lowered?
No.
No?
Too many variants.
Oh, really? Okay. Interesting. Okay. So I just throw that out there. Right. So I mentioned this at the very top that EV prices, we've been watching EV prices go lower and lower over the past year and a half or so. But there's been a few raises recently. So I'm just kind of wondering, does this mean have we seen the end of the collapse of EV prices? So Tesla has raised the price of the Model S and Model X. And Ford has also made the model of the Mustang Mach-E a bit more expensive. So it feels like an odd move to me in the Tesla world, at least. The Model S and Model X both went up by $2,000 for all versions in the U.S. So this is a much lower volume vehicle than the Model 3 and Model Y, of course. We don't know exactly how many Tesla is selling these days. The Q2 sales for the S, X, and Cybertruck were 24,255. Tesla sold about 12,000 Cybertrucks altogether at the end of June. Going by the recall numbers, you know, issued a recall for a trim falling off or something. So that could mean about 14,000 S and X vehicles, which it would translate into an additional, you know, $28 million per quarter, I guess, with this money. Meanwhile, at Ford, the increases are smaller on the Mach-E, and the Mach-E rally actually came down like almost $1,000. So the increases are tiny, like $195 on the non-performance trims. The Mach-E GT, however, is up by $1,190. So these are all kind of small changes, really. But Tom, should we look at these as small adjustments with no significance to the larger pictures, or as harbingers of prices increases to come?
No, I think it's just price adjustments. They go up, they go down. We've seen this. Tesla's constantly raising prices, lowering prices, and so are the other manufacturers. So I don't think it's a harbinger of any specific, change in overall pricing, to be honest with you. You know, I think it's coincidence that, you know, different models from different companies have gone, say, up at the same time, personally. I will tell you this, you talked about Mach-E. I am seeing so many of them on the road around where I live. It's crazy. I can't believe how many. I can't drive, you know, half an hour without seeing one on the roads around me. So I know Ford must be selling Mach-E's pretty well at this point.
Yeah. All right. That's pretty much all the main news I had. I just had this other one thing I wanted to talk about just really briefly. I saw a thing last night. Lucid has signed an agreement with this company called Graphite One to supply them with about 5,000 tons of graphite per year for like 5 years initially. So Graphite One is gearing up to extract the graphite used in the anode of like most EV batteries. It's like an important mineral. So they're gearing up to extract from the Graphite Creek project on the Seward Peninsula of Western Alaska. And they expect that mineral to be flowing there in about 3 years. So that roughly corresponds to when Lucid will be producing more affordable, higher volume vehicles. So I found this in mining.com. I read them all. So right now, this is actually very interesting. If you're looking at supply chain things and like minerals and metals, like copper, mining.com is kind of an interesting little site to peruse. So right now, Lucid buys cells from LG, Samsung, SDI, and Panasonic. But it sure looks like it's considering at least producing cells. I don't know. What do you guys make of this? Anything at all?
I think more exciting than this was watching the Gravity come down the line this week. Did you see that?
That's true. That's worth a mention.
That's worth a big mention. That's the first pre-series Gravity, which means that they've pretty much locked in final design, final hardware specifications, and now it's just tuning. So now they have to get everything locked in. I'm sure there's still room for some changes. It's not a series car, but the first pre-series car, testing the production facility and putting together all of the hard work they've been doing over the last few years, that went down the line. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, Peter Rawlinson was pretty excited about that. Actually, I read the tweet. I think I shared that somewhere. But yeah, I mean that means the Gravity is coming out this fall, right?
It's supposed to before the end of the year.
Yeah. All right. It's time. I don't have anything else. Have anything else you want to talk about?
Well, Jordan asked me to talk about the VinFast for a minute because I've been driving.
Yeah. I had actually in the top of the thing, but then I thought, maybe you don't want to talk about the VinFast right now. We talk because you don't have a. I was going to maybe wait a week till you have a video out. I know you've been driving it around a little bit.
Yeah, but it's why wait till I have a video? I can at least tell people what's going on now. It's not. So Jordan really hates it. So here's what's really funny is Francie's been raving about the VinFast, and we're all looking at each other over here like, how is it really? I mean, is she comparing it to her 2014 or 2016 Subaru Outback, or is she comparing it to the competitive segment? And so we've all been a little bit hesitant to like totally believe Francie that the VinFast is great. We're happy she's enjoying it. But Jordan got it and he was like, oh my God, this is awful. So we're going to do a lot of stuff on our side about it. I've been daily driving it. This will be my third day now daily driving it. I actually really don't mind it. And I got in it last night and I actually really liked it. I've got the sound system dialed into where it doesn't bother me much. Some of the remote commands are weird. Like I preconditioned it yesterday. I went to go see this Twisters movie. I don't go to the movies often, but I went to go see this Twisters movie. And as the theater was letting out, I preconditioned it because it was hot outside. And I get to the car and the whole thing's on. Headlights are on, screen's on. Looks like someone could just be sitting in there, but the car was locked still. It just turns the whole thing on. And there's lots of little things that certainly bother me. And I've had weird glitches. The backup camera sometimes is just awful. Like there's real major annoyances with it, but it's not, I haven't really taken it on a trip or done anything long distance with it yet for it to really bother me. And so I think I'm just at this phase in my VinFast experience where I'm like, oh, I can kind of live with most of the stuff. Okay. Most of it's just software and blah, blah, blah. And then I think we're going to hit a point where it's just going to really piss me off. So we'll see. That's my expectation. And Jordan definitely went through the same thing. It went from like, that's not bad to holy smokes, get this out of my driveway. So here's Francie in the show. Francie was saying that the VinFast had better driver assistance than autopilot. But then Jordan called me last night and said that he was editing her road trip video and it kept failing on her. And I'm not sure how that's better than autopilot. So we love Francie. We really love Francie. But I'm not sure. I really think Francie needs to drive every competitor and then we can get her. So when she hopefully comes back out here next time, I'm going to make sure she drives Aria. Model Y she spends a lot of time with, Q4 e-tron, ID4, all of this like $50,000 SUV electric platform. But she really likes it. And now she says it wasn't better than Autopilot, but I just listened to your podcast that said you did not like Autopilot and the VinFast had better driver assistance.
She says she didn't say that. Didn't say that, she says.
But I mean, Jordan and I both listened to the podcast and we're both like, wow, that's pretty impressive that Autopilot really annoyed her so much.
Michael Palmowski says, you gave her the car. You don't love her, apparently.
We love Francie. But we gave her the car kind of as a joke. And what I told her was that if it's really terrible, like, we'll get you something else. But she's embraced it and she loves it. And I think that's great. I think it's wonderful. I just think the car, even in just my couple days of driving, it needs a couple software updates. But like I said, I'm really going to... and Jordan says we need a crew show to get to the bottom of everything because he and I are on the same wavelength. And Francie's saying she didn't say it had better driver assistance than Autopilot. A lot to dig into, but it's all fun. It's all enjoyable. We're all reviewing the car. And I would say I'm actually leaning towards Francie's camp so far, where it's kind of nice. I really did enjoy getting into it yesterday and driving it. And it's pretty fast. Like, the throttle mapping around the city infuriates me. You hit the throttle from a stoplight, you have to wait. It's like, okay.
Oh.
Throttle, it's a full second delay. A full one Mississippi before it picks up and moves.
But
than that, it's...
great.
You know, what I do, what you can do is you can just kick it past the kickdown switch and it wakes everything up. So you just see this VinFast launching at every light. And that's how I've been driving.
So if you nail it, then it takes off. You don't get that one in Mississippi.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, okay.
The turbo's got to spool up.
That's what it feels like, Tom. It feels like I just drove a Hyundai Santa Fe, the new one with a dual clutch. And it took a minute for it to, you know, rev match, get the clutch locked in and then take off.
Yes.
So you just have to select the amount of power you think you want and let something happen for it to reach that power level. It's the most annoying experience in an electric car.
Oh, Mark Longoria reminds me too. He's looking forward to Colton's review of the VinFast. So Colton's going to put a video out going all over the VinFast and looking at just quality of the...
It's live.
It's out now?
Yep.
Oh, sweet. Okay. That came out this morning?
Yep.
Awesome. All right. So yeah, if you're interested in VinFast build quality, that's over there on Out of Spec Detailing. So yeah, something to do after the show.
Who? What was I saw when I was on holiday? I saw somebody reposted an RJ response to Colton. What was that about? Build quality in Rivians, wasn't it? Was that more than a week ago?
That was like 3 days ago. We did the Gen 1 versus Gen 2 build quality review.
And RJ saw it and responded. And that's just nice that, like,
That was a while ago.
Okay. I'm catching up. And I think it's nice. You know, it's obviously, you know, you guys have talked there is lines of communication. But I just think it's cool that car CEOs are involved in car fan media and are consuming it, whether he just saw the headline or whether he watched the whole thing. I don't know. But I just think that's where I saw that. I thought that's very, very cool because, you know, Colton is has added such a depth and dimension to what you do at Out of Spec. You know, and Out of Spec could have just for always have been you making motoring videos for, you know, for all of time. But the way that you've expanded that into people like Francie and Colton as well, I love what he does. And I love to get that perspective from somebody else who brings a whole different background. So it's cool that people like RJ see that and respond. So that was a while ago.
So speaking of the R1, the first gen R1S and R1, you know, the second gen comparison, how did that go? I didn't get a chance to see that.
Oh, we are not done posting the videos. We had it for 1 day. We had the new R1S LFP. I think we shot 5 videos with it. Jordan really did a bunch of stuff with it. And we all currently are like, Drew called me after because Drew went and drove it too. And we're both like, it's kind of nice. We have the Gen 1s. I'm like, yeah, I kind of like my Gen 1 too. You know, so I don't know. The Gen 2 certainly, especially for R1S, has some improvements. It bothers me less than everyone else on my team, but everyone hates the door handles. To me, I'm like, I can live with it. But Alyssa, she looked at the new R1S. She's like, we are not getting one unless they fix the door handles.
And the I'm exterior like, wow. door handles on the outside?
They're electronic now, and they drive her insane. To me, I don't actually have a problem with them, but that's why you need multiple opinions. And so Jordan hates the door handles. And yeah, so basically, but still, I think there's a couple more videos left to post. But we did range test, charging test, 10% challenge, which we have to redo. And then we just had an issue with the procedure. We did a build quality comparison, which that's up. And then we did what's going up today, which is Gen 1 versus Gen 2 differences and features and experience.
So how'd they compare on build quality?
Oh, yeah. Gen 2 dials it up really nice. Really fixes a lot of issues. Even through Gen 1, they fixed a lot of issues. And Colton talks about you know, them clearly watching some of his videos and dialing it in. We know Rivian watches the Out of Spec Detailing channel very closely. So, but basically, it seems they've really dialed that car in.
Yeah, there were some issues with the back and the R1T, right? Where you lift up the the little piece of flap that lifts up in the very back to get the under bed storage.
I'm not sure if there was an issue there. I don't think I knew about that one.
Okay, so yeah, I'm not quite remembering exactly what the thing was. I just remember there's some sort of misalignment because people close it from one side more than the other side. I don't know. It's a little bit foggy in my brain.
That was more of the truck, the issue.
Right. The R1T. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But we did R1Ss for this one.
Right.
So we haven't seen an second generation R1T yet.
But just speaking to their improvements over time on the first gen, because they had, it was like not great for a while. Then they improved it. You all put out some videos about that or something. And then it was improved. I don't know.
Yeah, Rivian's always improving. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it got worse for a while, and then it's getting better. And but we will say like Gen 2 is good. We had like a couple issues, squeaky door handles. There was wind noise in our truck, so they still have room to dial it in. And this was one of the very first Gen 2s built. But it is our local demo car. So what we did was like you can't test drive a Rivian on Sundays here because their shop is closed. And they do not put the LFP base cars in their press fleet, which to me is annoying. So I was like, well, the one most people are going to buy is the standard one. So whatever you have to do to get us a standard one, let us have it. So they said, okay, test drives end on Friday and they start back up on Monday. So we picked it up Friday afternoon and it went back Monday morning. And they let us have the local test drive car.
Nice. That's nice of them. They're pretty. Mm-hmm. It's pretty. I like Rivian a lot.
Yeah, they do a lot. I mean, they never really have ever said no to a request on our side. If we need something, Rivian will figure out a way to get it to us, which is great. And you know, there's so much content coming. I mean, we've been toying with the idea of starting just a testing channel for Out of Spec, which is, you know, like almost half of the videos now in reviews are like 10% challenge, charging test, range test. Most of our audience actually are not interested in those. They just want to see the reviews on the car, you know, sort of the first drives, I've lived with this for a week or whatever. So we're thinking, okay, there's so many cars. I actually put out a job request for someone to do our testing procedures here to help us with that. So if you live in Northern Colorado and want to help Out of Spec, I've received a lot of emails already. I haven't had a chance to go through them yet, but just putting it out there, we are going to go through the interview process of finding, you know, a test engineer to go up against Motor Trend, Car and Driver, et cetera, et cetera. And so should be interesting to see how that goes. And yeah, more to come.
So if anyone's interested in the audience here in that position, where should they get in touch with you?
Info@outofspecstudios.com.
Info@outofspecstudios.com. Sounds good.
Yeah, but it's going to be quite intensive. I don't want to paint the picture that this is going to be an easy job. That's going to be it's going to be boring, a lot of repetitive work, a lot of nerd analysis. Late nights mostly, not even long hours, but like you're going to start at like 7 p.m. and work till 3 a.m. type situation because that's when the roads are empty and you have to film. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, for the right person, though, it would be a great, you know, great gig, I think. All right. So
you got to be a special type of nerd.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up, click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications. Thank you all very much for joining us, and we'll see you all again next time. Ciao.